Good evening.
Well, I understand the technological screen caffeine didn't work, so tonight, no slides, as Tim had mentioned. But be that as it may, I think we'll still get some key points across. Because at the end of the day, prison ministry is just about that, prison ministry. Please keep your Bibles open if you were following what Andrew had to read, because we're going to discuss that again in just a minute. But seriously, when you think about prison ministry, what's the first thing that goes through your mind? Bars? Steel fence? Razor wire? And that's certainly part of it. But there's also not just prison ministry behind the bars. There's a ton of prison ministry beyond the bars. And when you think about Central being in the prison ministry, when did it first start? Well, it started when they first became a congregation, because their prison ministry at that time, as it's been to every day since then, is prevention. Prevention from going to prison. All churches of Christ are involved with that. And that's important. You walk out of this auditorium, go to your right, go on forward to the old auditorium, and turn right. What do you come to? You come to a couple of different hallways that are for children, right? Cradle roll, the young, elementary. And then we move on to the preteens and the teens and the campus and the young families and the adults, and the senior ministry. All of that is prison ministry prevention. And Central has been involved with prison ministry behind the bars for many years. Tim has been going in and out of a lot of the local jails. The roots of the prison ministry that we're doing now dates back to 2009. And when John asked if we could do a presentation on prison ministry tonight. Of course, I was tickled about it. I look out here and I can see, oh gosh, that's 10, 20, 40, 50, 80, 90 more volunteers. I think this is a good evening. But I asked him seriously, what would he really like to touch on? And I think he made a real good point. What happened with prison ministry in 2022? And what do you think is going to happen with prison ministry in 2023? And that's what we're going to be spending our time on. And in a nutshell, we expect it to increase, both behind the bars and beyond the bars. And we ask, well, why? Why do we do this? And we know that we've got that command spiritually from the Bible. In Matthew 28, verse 19, it tells us, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit." That's one of the scriptural commands that we have. And it doesn't say, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations except those in prison." They count. They're also made in the image of God, as we are. So a lot of what we're going to talk about is how is this change occurring. And get us a set just a little bit more with some basics. I'd like to read Matthew chapter 25, starting with verse 41. This is the rest of what we just had as the scripture reading. "Then he," and this is Jesus, "said to those on his left, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me.' Then they also will answer, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? And he will answer them, saying, truly, I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So we can see that this is a command, and we take it very seriously. Now, prison ministry, and for those of you that may be online and are not here where we are in Central Church of Christ in Johnson City, Tennessee, you may be doing some prison ministry work, or you may be considering it. And so what we're going to talk about tonight, many of the basics for prison ministry are common. There's obviously going to be a few things that are a little unique to each area, but most of it is transferable wherever you may be for prison ministry. Why is prison ministry of importance to us? Think about it just from your standpoint. Why is it important? Well, do you have a neighbor? Or have you moved into a new area? Do you know who your neighbors are? What about coworkers? What about them? Do you know anything about them? Have they just shown up? You don't really know who they are? What about that visitor that comes through that door and sits down on the pew? Think any of those may have been incarcerated? Tim and I have had the opportunity to work with four men, three of whom are, all four of them have been released. Three of them are out gainfully, or two of them are out gainfully employed. Two of them were going through TPOM at the time. Those four men combined have approximately 140 years in prison. Is one of them going to be your neighbor? Is one of them going to be sitting on the pew? I can tell you, one of them already has been. We've got to remember to view this as God does. God is more worried about where someone is going than where they've been. Our job in prison ministry is to help to change that way of thinking, to change that way of living. I'd like to run through a few numbers now, which can kind of put some of this in perspective. In the United States, there's approximately 2.1 million people that are incarcerated in prison for felony conviction. 2.1 million. Depending on whose survey you read, 95 to 97% of them will be released. They're coming to a suburb near you. They're coming to a workplace near you. They're coming to a church that you may attend. And we want to help as much as we can, that while they may have been put in there without question for a reason that violated law, and some of these things have been horrendous, is this the same person, or has this person changed his mind and changed his way of thinking and become a child of God? In Tennessee, now getting local, Tennessee has about right now through November of this year, last year, roughly 24,500 that they were responsible for, the Tennessee Department of Corrections. It costs $23,000 a year to keep each inmate incarcerated. Death row is a little higher, but $23,000 a year. Some of you I know out there are really good with math. Bottom line, that's $563 million a year just to house. That's not capital costs. That's housing, operational costs. So how do we change these things? One of the key things that gets measured is recidivism. Recidivism is that number that says how many people who have been released reoffend and come back. The higher the number, the worse the situation. In the United States, as a country, including Alaska and Hawaii, it ranges, again, depending on whose study you accept, recidivism rate is 62 to 66%. 2 out of 3 reoffend. In Tennessee, it's 46%. And by the way, this recidivism rate, there's no actual formula. There's kind of a working agreement that we will use a 3-year period. If somebody's released and they reoffend within 3 years, that counts as recidivism. Tennessee's 46%. That's a marked improvement. TPOM, Tennessee Prison Outreach Ministry, that we will work very closely with, that has the men's and women's transitional housing, they have a program that runs 4 months long that assists transition back into the society. Their recidivism rate pre-COVID was 7%. It has jumped to 9% because of COVID and then some of the situations that we had with short staffing association. But that's 9%. It's ways down from 62 to 66. Now, a study was done in South Texas, and the study was only done at one unit. And basically what they wanted to find out was if an inmate took a new life behavior class in the classroom, not correspondence, in the classroom, so it's interactive, at least one before they were released, what happened to them? And then what they were going to do is let's compare that with that general recidivism rate for general population. The initial study had 2,400 inmates, 1,900 men, 500 women. The recidivism rate was less than 1%. They've continued that study, and we expect to have more information by the second quarter of this year. They're using the same parameters as they have. So we can see that when we can get to an inmate, when we can teach them God's word, faith-based, life skill, life can change. There'll be some pictures, I think, shortly, of a graduation that took place at the Washington County Detention Center for the women just a few hours ago. Five ladies graduated. And all new life behavior courses have something in common. There's an attendance requirement, and there's a performance requirement. It's not just show up, sign in, and get a certificate. You have to be present, and you have to perform properly. So, what about new life behavior? What about the situation with us here in Johnson City, and particularly where we started with new life behavior with Northeast Correctional Complex? Well, our first class took place in June, started in June of 2009. Our graduation rate was 50%. Now, if you're in the major leagues and you bat 50%, that is good. If you're holding a new life behavior class and your graduation rate is 50%, that is bad. So we said, this is not working. We're going to have to change a few things. Well, the first thing we did was we said, all new life behavior courses, some of you have heard this before, and I apologize for repeating it. There are 13 lessons. And you have to be present for 10 of the 13. and you have to be interactive with it. So we decided we're not going to, first time we meet, we're not going to have a lesson. We're going to have an introduction, and then we're going to do some things to assist the interaction. Well, not quite 1,000 students later, the graduation rate for New Life Behavior graduates is 83%. And that sounds good, and it compared to 50%, it's wonderful. But here's the key number. If we just count the graduates up on the compound, or as of last year, also in the annex up at Boughton City, the graduation rate is 88%. And we've had a few classes that have busted 90%. What's the difference? The difference is early days, 2009, up through just before COVID, we had a lot of classes down at Carter County, which was had a very small room. And the compound, we now have two classrooms, and it's like a very good educational room. We have small groups. That's what we focus on. We have 25 to 35 students every time. It's interaction. We developed teacher's aides, and those teacher's aides are inmates, and they help us. And that's what generates 88% right now. And we think it'll continue to improve. So we're tickled with that part of it. Now let's take a look at what we did last year. Last year, yes, we were at Northeast. Carter County Annex closed in June of 2021. We were on the compound and we were in the annex. But we did not have any classes for 3 months last year, January, February, and March. Short-staffed, not enough officers, could not get them in safely to the classes. So we only really had 9 months with Northeast. The day reporting center, that's, by the way, 2 miles from here and meets on Mondays, they started in 2020, and they had a pretty good year. But then we had some new things happen in 2022. Johnson City Detention Center came online in the summer. And shortly thereafter, it closed. I'm going to come back to it. Washington County Detention Center came online towards the first week in October. Unicoi County Jail came online with us about September, I believe it was. Now, what did Johnson City, Washington County, and Unicoi all have in common? They're not part of Tennessee Department of Corrections. They're their individual entity. Now, and the ladies, these are all for women. All three of those locations right now are just women. And so you look at that and say, wow, that was great. And it is. It is great. Because I can think back when a couple of men tried to get us into a couple of these locations and weren't successful. Now, I'm not going to embarrass anybody, but their initials are Tim Hall and Marshall Danby. And so we owe a debt of gratitude what these ladies have done. Five baptisms yesterday and five graduates of a New Life Behavior course today. So we expect Northeast, DRC, Johnson City closed, Washington County Detention Center, and the Unicoi County Jail, we expect them all to operate fully this year. We know that there will be times when there may be an incident or something goes on and we miss a class here or we miss a class there. That's going to happen. But when we got into Johnson City, we were so happy because we had like 10 baptisms 3 or 4 weeks after we got in there. And then they announced they were closing. And we said, goodness gracious, you know, Lord, what are you doing? Well, it doesn't take too long to go to Acts 8:4 and say, what happened with them when they were under persecution? They scattered. Some of them went to Washington County Detention Center. Some of them went to Unicoi. Some of them went to other TDOC facilities. And we had one lady that went to Unicoi and helped someone else convert, another woman down there. And it's just, it's rolling very well right now. So what can we do to reduce recidivism and increase the graduation rate of our new life behavior courses? That's what we're going to try and do. Well, we do know that if you have to change someone's way of thinking, if you want to stop bad actions, you have to have already ceased bad behavior. And you're not going to do that till you've changed thinking. Now, Stephen Covey, the author of the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, had one section where he had this little statement in there, a little chart actually, like a chart. And here's what he said, and he starts it by saying, up on that screen, if we had a huge thing that said, you decide. The you is in red, the decide word is in black. You decide. And then he makes a statement. There are three constants in life. Choice, change, and principles. Three constants in life. Choice, change, and principles. If we cannot positively affect all three of those, quite frankly, starting with principles, faith-based life skill, we're not going to be able to do that. We recognize that we work with an awful lot of men who made some horrendous decisions, some of them many years ago, some of them who may not be ever be released. But we know that we can make the rest of their time while they're incarcerated to where they're not a problem for the Tennessee Department of Correction or for the other inmates. So last year, in 22, we asked our Synergy team and our teachers' aides to help us develop a logo and guiding principles. And the logo basically shows a person, just basically a profile, walking out of a prison with a bag over his back, or her back. And it shows that he's coming out of from behind the bars, and the chain is breaking, and you can see the sun coming up over there. And basically, change thinking for changed living. How do we do that? We do that by teaching cognitive, biblical principles applied to everyday life in difficult circumstances. Now, I think we all face difficult circumstances at times, but if we have the proper principles and these change or changes come along, our choice is going to be more God-oriented than it is Marshall-oriented. And that's what we're trying to do. When we look at 2 Timothy 2:15, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. That's one of our goals for every one of those folks. So what kind of services and programs do we truly have? Now, we're going to have some numbers in here. I'm going to round them, and without seeing them, I'm going to try and make it as easy as I can. Now, remember, we're dealing with Northeast Correctional Complex, the Washington County Detention Center, the Unicoi County Jail, and the DRC. The DRC is beyond the bars. The other three are all behind the bars. In worship services, at Northeast and Washington County and at Unicoi, we're there on Sunday. Bible classes, We have those at Washington County, and we have those at Northeast Correctional. Now, and also the DRC. Now, for worship services in general, in 2022, we had about 961 attendees that we keep track of. We keep track of this. And that's basically on the compound. That's an hour and a half each. And at Washington County now, they have an hour. And this I think, was brilliant what they did. They had a 2 o'clock, let's see, how'd that work? 2 o'clock to 3:30, an hour and a half. They got another half hour, so it's 1:30 to 3:30. So now at Washington County, these ladies have set it up with the sergeant's approval that 1:30 to basically 2:30 is worship, and 2:30 to 3:30 is new life behavior classes. And they start a new one next Sunday, Managing My Anger. Brilliant, brilliant. So we think we're going to jump from 960-some to probably 2,300 attendees. Bible classes at the DRC are going to jump from probably 220 to 240. That is a real hard unknown, because these folks are, they may be on probation, they may be on parole, they may have to do just phase one or phase two or phase three. That's a very difficult work. And that takes place on a Monday afternoon from noon to 1 o'clock. Now, in our new life behavior classes, last year, Washington County started but wasn't able to finish it before the end of the year. We were only able to do three classes. And combining that with Washington County, we had 75 participants. This year, our very first, on January 19th, we had our first classes on the compound, three different classes, two on the compound, one on the annex. We had 92 attendees. We expect to be somewhere around 250 by the end of this year. We weren't able to hold any seminars last year. We expect 180 this year to attend that. Now, that's a lot of numbers. Here's a number I'd like you to keep in mind. We did slightly over 6,000 classroom hours in 22. We expect to do somewhere around probably real close to 12, maybe 13,000 classroom hours. That's worship, Bible class in the coming year. That's a lot of time with a lot of people. Baptisms last year, we had 28. So far this year, we've had 7. 5 of them yesterday. So that's our prison and ministry programs and services. Let me tell you how some of this ties together. I mentioned teachers' aides and synergy team. In 2018, I believe it was, some of you may be familiar with this. It's called Certified Peer Recovery Specialist. And basically, if you think about the phrase, walk a mile in my shoes, these are folks that have had recovery issues, mental health issues, or both. And they've overcome it. They've been free of any chemicals or destructive behavior for 2 years. There's a certain qualification for them to be considered, then they have to go through training. The first 6 that they picked at Northeast, 2 of them were our current student, 2 of our current students, both of whom have been released. And one works in that certified peer recovery specialist industry. The other one is driving a CDL license. Tim and I were tickled to hear a couple of weeks ago that we had 2 more of our students that had just been certified, Arthur and a fellow named Joe. Now, they had been teacher's aides, and Joe had been both Synergy team members, and Joe had been a Synergy team member for quite a while. And we also discovered something else. To become certified, the state, in fact, this whole certified peer recovery specialist system works under the Tennessee Department of Mental Health, and substance abuse services. To become certified, once you've got some of your initial training, then you have to put in hours actually doing this work. Well, it turns out, with New Life Behavior, on folks that we selected as teacher's aides, synergy team members, after they had taken a class and got a certificate as a student, and the three that we're teaching up there right now is Christians Against Substance Abuse Recovery Program, Managing My Anger, Attitudes, and Behavior. When they take it as a teacher's aide, they don't get a student certificate. They get one that says, Joe provided 45 hours of training in instruction and counseling for the class. And Dr. Shaw, who in Northeast heads up their mental health, certified that that is eligible for hours to be counted to become a certified peer specialist. And we learned Thursday night, Mike and I learned that one of our other students there, Josh, has got all of his hours in, and he should be certified in the next couple of weeks. So those are some of the things where you're seeing good things happen and affects all the folks. Now, let's talk for a minute about beyond the bars. Mail call. Mail call in prison is just what you can imagine. They want to hear their name called. And we've heard time and time again from the inmates, getting mail is like hitting the lotto. We need pen pals. We need more pen pals. Please see Dennis or Linda. They're the ones that handle that. And we've got a training session in that, and we do need it, because Tim just mentioned there's some other ladies at Washington County, and I think there's one or two at Unicoi that are interested in having a pen pal. And that encouragement that's provided through the mail from beyond the bars is significant. Don't lose sight of that, please. Now, to each one of you potential volunteers for prison ministry, what's the requirements? Well, to get certified to go into Northeast or DRC, when you get certified for one, you get certified for both. Basically, if you got a sincere heart for others and are non-judgmental, that's it. Now, there is a stigma associated with prison ministry, some of it founded, some of it not. But at the end of the day, here's what we'd like to suggest to you to consider. You have to be certified to go in. So how can you go in, see what it's like, not commit yourself to any particular function on an ongoing basis? Well, it's really quite easy. You can get certified online, and we'll be happy to tell you how to do that. And then once you're certified, we'll wait until we have a graduation. Because when we have a graduation, which we'll probably have one towards the end of April, early May at Northeast, you can go in, and I'm looking at a picture right now of, I guess it's 14 or 15 volunteers that were in last September, and I see some of them setting out here, to help celebrate those graduates. And there's some folks that you could chat with. Now, but don't I have to go through a checkpoint? Yes, you do. You have to go through a checkpoint. And won't I have to go through some sliding gates or doors? Yes, you will. But when we do a graduation, it's done in what's called the VG, the Visitors Gallery. That is empty until we show up. We don't have to go through the yard or anything like that where the men actually are. So when we get in the visitors gallery, then our students, our synergy team, our teachers' aides, that's the folks that come in. And we just enjoy the next couple hours celebrating their accomplishments and encouraging one another. I think I can speak now for every volunteer that's gone in there. You never leave without multiple people saying, thank you. You never leave without feeling more encouraged when you come out than when you went in. And we have a group now that say, be sure to send my love to the church and to thank them. Again, that's going to be the end of April, early May. I was chatting with someone here not too long ago who said, you know, when I was younger, if somebody would have told me, this someone grew up in the church, that I would have gone to, you know, four countries in Africa and gone into prison ministry, I said, that ain't going to happen. Well, it did. If somebody would have told me when I was, 18 to 20, hey, you're going to be involved in prison ministry, that ain't going to happen. But it did. And I think we can do that. So what I'd like you to keep in mind is all of Central's outreach. And what was read for us this earlier, hungry, food, thirsty, naked, clothing, sick, visited, prison. Basically, we move from the pantry to prison. All of those need to be done. Some of us may be better cut out to assist with the pantry than the prison. That's fine. I think anyone that works either one of those is going to gain something from it. And I can assure you that from what I've seen, you gain a ton from work from the prison. So please keep all of that in mind and keep it centered. Please keep it centered in your mind. In closing, I'd like to read you what's called a messenger. This actually is a poem. It was published in the Daily Focus in, I think, either April or August of 2017 by a man who was known then as Poet in Chains. He's now known as Poet Unchained. But he wrote this for us as volunteers coming in there. It's called The Messenger. Thank you for the blessings because you've seen me blessed. With wisdom you've taught me, I've been impressed. Every time I felt stressed, you came with good news, so I didn't succumb to feeling the blues. You've entered the walls from a faraway place as a messenger to declare God's mercy and grace. You never lose your cool because you always stay calm with sound doctrine that's linked to a psalm. I'm not wise enough to quote the things that you say, but on the tablets of my heart, I've written away. You've shown me there's hope through my pain and distress. Because of my life, I've created a mess. I was in need of someone to show me a way, and you're the messenger the Lord has sent me today. You've been a wise and faithful steward of the blessings you've had, and you've treated me good, although I've been bad. You've helped to open my eyes when pain left me blind from the lust for the world that stayed on my mind. I wound up in this place because I was caught and out of place, but I'm alive, so I still have God's mercy and grace. You've opened my eyes to the fact we all sin, but some cover it up and keep it within. With wisdom you've taught me, I've been impressed. Thank you for the blessings because you've seen me blessed. And that's what you would be when you become a prison minister. You're a messenger. And I encourage you to give some thought to that. Now, there may be some here this evening that are not a child of God. And I would encourage you to think very seriously about making that step, understanding that step, and the benefit of that step, and visit with any one of the elders, ministers, or any of the men here. Or perhaps you are a child of God and you've made a mess and there's a problem and you'd like the prayers of the church. Would he be very happy to do that, to pray with you and for you? Will you please do that as we come and sing?